Our next speaker is someone I've already mentioned. Professor Alan Auerbach is the Robert Birch Professor of Economics and Law and the director of the new Birch Center for Tax Policy and Public Finance at the University of California, Berkeley, my alma mater. Having also taught at the University of Pennsylvania, Harvard, and Yale, Professor Auerbach is research associate for the National Bureau of Economic Research, and he served as deputy chief of staff of the U.S. Joint Committee on Taxation. He's a fellow of the Econometric Society. Professor Auerbach is also currently associate editor of several major journals in finance and statistics and tax policy, the author of over 60 scholarly articles and reviews. He's contributed to numerous scholarly books and studies, and he is the author of the book, The Taxation of Capital Income. I'm very pleased to introduce Alan Auerbach.
Thank you very much. I'm here neither as an advocate of privatization nor as a defender of the faith. Because I do think that Social Security is in need of more than a few refinements to keep it humming smoothly for another 60 years. So I start with the view that the Social Security system is in trouble and that we face hard choices in dealing with it. I also have the view that for a variety of reasons, privatization is attractive. But I think it's important to say that these are, in some sense, separate issues. They're obviously related because the impact of the problems of the Social Security system is that one of the impacts is that it causes us to focus more on the general issue of Social Security and whether we're doing it the way we should be doing it. That's a good thing that we're doing that. But I don't think we should mix up the two things in the sense that there are certain problems of the Social Security system now which could be improved by privatization, but the financial crisis of Social Security and the poor rate of return associated with this financial crisis, the fact that we're short of money and we're going to be shorter still of money in the future, are in no way addressed by privatization. That is, privatization should stand or fall on its own merits, and may very well stand, and that may be the way to go for the Social Security system, but we should not view that as a vehicle for solving the financial crisis that Social Security is in. Put simply, the money's already gone. We can't make it come back by going to privatization. On a going forward basis, we may want to feel that privatization is better, and we should talk about that. But we can't make money that has already been spent reappear. What I'm going to talk about is what the problem, briefly, what the problems are and what privatization can and cannot do. The current problems, as you just heard, are serious and getting worse. The Social Security system, as estimated through 75 years, needs about 2.2% of payroll, or just under 1% of GDP, to keep the trust fund from going into the red over that period. And indeed, the problem is worse than that, because the trajectory of the Social Security system at the end of that period is very unfavorable. So if you actually dared to look even farther into the future, which seems like a strange thing to do, but for programs that are demographically driven like this, it's necessary, the gap is actually considerably bigger. So we're not talking about under 1%, but probably more like 1.5% to 2% of GDP. And indeed, this is a smaller problem than Medicare, which is being driven by two factors, not just demographic changes, but also changes in relative spending on health care. But one problem at a time. Now, what can be done of this short of privatization? Because that's obviously the first thing that one might consider. Well, there's different approaches. There are the obvious approaches: cut benefits, raise taxes. This was the approach taken after the Greenspan Commission's report in the early 1980s, both of which, mostly raising taxes, but to a certain lesser extent, cutting benefits, at least in the future. Now, there isn't that much of discussion about this right now. There may be in the future, and certainly if we do discuss these sorts of options, we should keep in mind that there are some approaches that are far better than others. There are better and worse ways to cut benefits. There are better and worse ways to raise taxes. We shouldn't simply say, well, because this isn't privatization, it belongs in a specific category of solutions, all of which are equally viable. Some of them are really bad ideas. And one fear that one might have is that if privatization strikes out and doesn't become the way we take, that we then end up with a real, really bad solution, quote-unquote solution, that does things in a way that isn't that attractive. Now, there's a less obvious way of approaching things than simply cutting benefits and raising taxes, which is to find the money somewhere else. Government finds it easier to do that than you know, an accountant might. One proposal, which has been around, less in jest, perhaps, than admitting the immigrants, was floated, for example, in the Social Security Advisory Council, was to enroll more workers. Find some people out there, like state and local government employees, who aren't currently in the system, and force them into the system. Now, given that we have to pay benefits to them in the future, too, this is a little bit like losing a little bit on each sale and making it up on volume. And or, like, to use another analogy, pulling people out of the lifeboats onto the sinking ship. Or we could use general revenues, which over the years has been discussed, usually rejected by many people of different political stripes who felt that the Social Security system should be best viewed as a separate entity and not have funds commingled with the rest of the government. Interestingly, despite all the indirectness of the actual proposal, this is what President Clinton's proposals do. He's proposing not to put current general revenues, into the Social Security Trust Fund. He's proposing to put additional federal debt, into the Social Security Trust Fund. And presumably that means in the future, when that debt has to be serviced, the money is going to come from general revenues, because we don't use those payroll taxes to fund payments on the national debt. We use general revenues, mostly income taxes. Now that's something that could be countenanced, but of course that doesn't make extra money for the government. That's taking money not from state and local workers, as in the first case, it's taking money from other government programs or from taxpayers if it involves a tax increase. This is a choice that's being made, but it's not. If it's solving the Social Security crisis without raising revenue and without cutting other spending, then it's causing a crisis somewhere else to get worse. So that's not really an overall solution. And finally, there's the possibility of investing trust fund in equities to try to earn a higher rate of return. And here there are a couple of issues that come up, some of which also come up in the case of privatization. But additional issues that come up here have to do with government involvement. And this is an issue that's been discussed a lot. I think there's also the general issue, which I'll come back to in talking about privatization, which is what if markets do badly rather than well? To what extent is there a political commitment, if not an explicit commitment, to make up the difference? We certainly have to think of that if it's money within the government going to pay for benefits. But it will also come up in the case of privatization. In short, there are no politically painless solutions to this problem, real solutions, within the context of the public social security system. So what can privatization do? I'm going to talk about what I see as the true potential benefits of privatization. First, it can give greater access to equity markets for people who currently aren't involved in them. People who don't do much saving outside of Social Security now have no involvement in the equity markets, and this would give them an opportunity, essentially by forcing them to save, but giving them the opportunity to choose where to put the money. And I know that is an argument given by proponents of privatization, and I think that's a real argument. It also would make the system more transparent. It would give people a better sense of the connection between their contributions and their benefits, because they'd actually see an account. There wouldn't be this mysterious organization in Washington to which taxes go, and then sometime in the distant future, benefits come. It would eliminate anomalies in the methods of benefit calculation. You heard about the way working wives are penalized. These sorts of things happen because benefit formulas are are calculated in an arbitrary way, not really related to payroll tax payments. And if they were related to payroll tax payments, this sort of thing couldn't arise except by intent. Government could say, we're going to give a subsidy or we're going to impose a tax on this particular group or another. But in many cases, one guesses that these aren't there intentionally. They rose over the years by accident, and inertia has kept them there. And finally, it would make, and this is in some sense viewed by some as a benefit and by others as a cost, it would make the redistributive elements of Social Security more transparent. There are groups, even with shorter life expectancy, poorer people do better through Social Security than higher income people. Not as well as might be implied by the formulas themselves, because they don't live as long. But on average, the poor do better because they get a higher so-called replacement rate, even if for a shorter period of time. But not all poor groups fare equally well, and there are all kinds of transfers based on different cohorts and so forth. And making it, while one might fear what would happen to elements of redistribution if they were made more explicit, it certainly seems as though a rational political debate would benefit if what's going on was more evident. Okay, that's what privatization can do, and I think those are the grounds for the appropriate grounds for discussion of privatization. What privatization cannot do is eliminate the funding imbalance. It's often said that Social Security gives people a pretty bad deal in terms of a rate of return on their funds, and that's under current rules. That's going to get even worse if we try to, say, cut benefits and raise taxes. All true. But the major reason why the rate of return is so bad is because a large part of the money that people are not getting on the on what they're putting away is money, in a sense, that is already gone. That is, to pay off the benefits of current beneficiaries who themselves made payments to past beneficiaries. The money's not there, and therefore a lot of what current people enrolled in the system are paying for, and hence will not get informed in terms of their own benefits, is the benefits of current and past generations. Putting it another way, the social system is not funded. It's not adequately funded. There is a trust fund, but it's nowhere near what's necessary to pay for the future Social Security benefits of people currently in the system. The money's not there. Enacting a private system isn't going to make the money appear. So how can we make the rate of return higher? Well, we can make it higher, I suppose, by reneging on benefits to existing generations, but we're not going to do that. So if we don't do that, then the only option that remains is to seek a higher rate of return through the equity market. That has benefits, but it also has costs, because at least the way we teach it in economics, there's a risk-return trade-off that causes equity to have a higher rate of return than the government debt that's currently in the Social Security Trust Fund. Now, it might be that, in general, people would be better off with more equity investment. Certainly, historical relative rates of return suggest that to be true. But there's also a risk. And I don't think that people should avoid taking risks in investment. In fact, it's been suggested that a lot of people in their retirement savings are too conservative. But given that this is a mandatory program, not the investment that people are taking on their own, the question we have to ask is, again, as in the case of a public system, what if the investments don't work out? What if a particular generation, contrary to long trends in historical experience, does badly in the stock market, and they've got all their money in it? What happens then? The question is, are we going to come in and help them? As a society, we've shown a commitment to do that in the past. And that's one of the reasons why we have mandatory Social Security pensions in the first place, because we felt we were going to support the indigent elderly in any event. And if we're going to support them, then we ought to make them save for their own retirement so that we don't have to. So we have the problem of people whose investments don't pan out. We have another kind of problem. We have the people who choose to invest and invest too conservatively. Don't invest in equity markets, and equity markets do well, and then relative to other members of the retired population, they look very poor. What do we do then? Do we help them out? It seems to me that we have to answer, in the context of any system, whether private or public, we have to answer questions like that. And ultimately, we may end up with a mixed system, for example, where there's some minimum benefit guaranteed that takes care of this problem. Or we may end up with a fully private system, but a private system which has certain restrictions or safeguards or requirements in terms of minimum accumulations that make sure that one of the original purposes of the Social Security system, which I think is a valid purpose, is still is still met, which is to ensure at least a minimum level of income for the elderly so that they are not indigent and then in need of further transfers. Thank you.